Hey guys, and welcome to Smart Women Read Romance, a book review podcast where we fangirl over all things romance. I'm Jessen.
And I'm Juliette.
And today we'll be reviewing Darling Beast, the seventh book in Elizabeth Hoyt's Maiden Lane series. But before we dive in, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform, and please rate and review us. If you want more romance discussions, follow us on our social media pages at SW Read Rom, and join our Facebook group, The Spoon Zone, and follow my YouTube channel, Jessen Reads Romance. If you like some podcast extras, become a patron of the podcast on Patreon, where we have extra content, including exclusive episodes, and give away free stickers, books, and bookmarks. The Read Romance enamel pins are now available on my Etsy shop, SW Read Rom, and special shout out to all of our patrons. We love and appreciate all of the support. So, for this episode chat. You are probably aware, and by the time this episode comes out, it probably is not going to be a thing anymore, but it doesn't matter because I want to talk about it. But the whole thing that happened on Twitter about that Harley Quinn episode where they were like, hey, we can't show Batman going down on Catwoman.
Wait,
please remove that. Did you not? Were you not privy to that at all?
No, please.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't talk to you.
What do you mean you can't show this?
So apparently some DC execs said that, hey, we can't have Batman going down on Catwoman because we need to sell toys and heroes don't do this. And so, lame ass excuses.
Like my heroes do.
And exactly. And so there was like a huge backlash and saying like, so you're saying that heroes are selfish lovers or whatever? Like what's going on with this? And what's so wrong about going down on a woman? Like it's celebrated to go down on a man, but like a woman, it's dirty.
Yeah.
It's not safe for kids. And they were talking about how like all the instances in comics where characters do have sex, like that's all fine.
Right.
But like Batman can't go down on Catwoman.
Oh my
But there was
goodness.
A huge backlash and there were so many funny shit things going on, and it was I'm gonna
Please
show Juliet
me.
I'm gonna
Please.
Show Juliet a couple things. So this one, it says, you can't tell me Batman's mask wasn't made specifically for cunnilingus. And this one says, if Batman doesn't eat pussy, then what the fuck are these handles for? Zack Snyder himself. Today, and this happened like a couple days ago, it had died down, but Zack Snyder today posted this and he said canon.
I love
this.
Someone
says, if you make this happen, I will fully get behind restoring the Snyderverse. Someone else says, Justice League Part 2, Justice is morning.
Yes.
And someone else says, more like, Justice is coming.
Justice
Guys,
is coming.
But like, when it first happened, I'm like, how stupid. But honestly, with the conversations that's been going on lately, especially in like Romancelandia, there was just like so much backlash with like the romance genre, people calling it guilty pleasure on TikTok and just like YHEA, like whatever. And it's just like, it's what we fight against every single day, the stigma against romance genre. And it's just like, this is just another form of it. It's like,
well, look.
Women's pleasure is somehow laughable.
Dirty and silly. Look, I have opinions on this. Well, I have lots of opinions on this, but specifically thinking about Bridgerton and Shonda Rhimes and how that's one of the first times I think I have ever seen a guy go down on a girl in film.
Blatantly.
With this beautiful sort of like aerial view on the white marble. I mean, y'all, it's fucking beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And I was like, yes, Shonda. Like, this is.
Exactly.
And it to me, it like totally like embodied romance. Do you know what I mean? Like from beginning to end.
And that's what I love about the romance genre so much. I was telling this to Jen and Crystal, do a book club called the Rake Appreciation Society, where they read some old school historical romances and new school, not just old school. But we were talking about the hero being amazing.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what I love about romance, because almost every single romance includes the hero going down on the woman. The first thing, like it's the first thing, the first
step
to pleasure.
It's a selfless lover thing to do.
Right.
A selfless lover would do that.
Exactly. You know? And it's like, make sure your woman gets off first.
Yes.
And then go on with your happy times.
Yes.
And I just love that about romance, because it puts the woman's pleasure first, because sometimes you have to work for it, and that's okay. And it's not our fault.
I know. We're complex.
Just work for us and we'll work for you.
Exactly.
We deserve just as much attention as you do.
Yeah,
so that's what I love about romance, because I feel like all heroes go down on women like it's their fucking job in romance.
That's
just like
fucking right.
That's what I love about romance.
Look.
So, look, you know, yeah. You know, anyway.
I'm very pro cunnilingus in all areas of life.
I was
life.
Also like, so does that mean this officially confirms that Marvel superheroes are better than DC superheroes? Because you know the Marvel superheroes are going down.
I'm a serious Marvel
especially
fan.
With Chris Evans as Captain America.
Please.
He lives down there. Like, please. He lives down there.
Y'all,
you can't tell me any different.
Captain is going to take care
the
of business.
The Cap is the Cap most selfless lover. I'm
he's
just
gonna
saying.
Take care of her. You've got to send me those screenshots. I've got to share those with my husband. He's gonna die.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Love it. All right, guys, let's talk about Darling Beast.
Yay.
So Juliet was actually the person who introduced me to the Maiden Lane series years and years and years ago, and we've already done a podcast on book three.
Yeah.
Scandalous Desires, which recently I've acquired a copy with a step back.
Ooh.
And the step back for Scandalous Desires is a bathtub scene. And it's a double page one.
No.
It is beautiful. It's perfect. I've been looking for it.
Mickey.
It was amazing. I was Sweet so Mickey. Happy that I found it. But I think this was one that you actually accidentally skipped.
I did. And like I went to Goodreads and I'm like, look, I remember there's a guy who was mute who was in the garden, whatever. Like I remember that. But I went back to Goodreads and sure enough, because that's the only way I keep track of what I've read is if I've marked it read on Goodreads. And I did not, I only had it on Want to Read. And I was like, oh my God, I legitimately skipped this one. And that's all y'all were talking about. You and Jen and Crystal were like, oh my God,
we did a binge.
So amazing.
We did a binge of Maiden Lanes recently, and we did a live show discussing how amazing the Maiden Lane series was. We had our favorites, and Darling Beast was one of my favorites, and I just loved this Beauty and the Beast retelling. It was unique one.
It is, and I love it. I loved it. I told you like recently that I can get burnt out on some of the Beauty and the Beast retellings because it's so common, even though I love that fairy tale myself. But this one legitimately is right up there with, what is Eloisa James?
When Beauty Tempts when the Beauty Beast? Tames the Beast?
I think When Beauty Tames
when Beauty
the Beast.
When Beauty Tames
yeah.
the Beast.
That's my ultimate favorite, but this one is like right up there with it. Like it was legitimately amazing.
It is beautiful. So let's talk about the characters real quick, and then we'll move on to the spoiler section. So first of all, we have Lily Stump, and she is an actress, a very celebrated actress. And she works, she was on the stage at this pleasure garden called Heart's Folly. And in the book previous to this one, which I feel like Elizabeth Hoyt does a really good job. These could be read as standalones pretty well. There's only a couple that interconnect to a point where it's like you really should read the previous ones to understand it. But I feel like this one's a pretty good standalone one.
Yeah.
And so Lily Stump, her stage name is Robin Goodfellow. And she is still living at, like, the ruins of Heart's Folly. They still have to reconstruct everything. The gardens are decimated. The stage, nobody can perform on it. And thank God some of the rooms were undamaged so she can live there. And she has her nursemaid Maud there. And she also has a young son, Indio, who she's taking care of. And so there's all kind of workers working to restore Heart's Folly. And that's whenever her son meets this guy in the garden, and he comes and he's like, Mom, there's a monster in the garden. So she goes out there thinking, oh, this is a young boy's imagination, and sees this behemoth of a man, like so much larger than any man she's ever seen in her life. And this is Apollo Graves, and he is Lord Kilborn, but he is in hiding. He is wanted because he's been accused of murder, and his sister recently broke him out of bedlam. And so he suffered some severe injuries, which causes him to not be able to speak because he got stomped on his throat. Mm-hmm. Like, it was horrifying. And we see the scenes in the previous book, but they recap it pretty well in this book. And so he is just trying to restore the gardens because he's invested a lot of his own money in this gardens. And he, I love how he pretends like he can't understand. Because he just doesn't want people to, like,
pretends to be mute and
talk
dumb.
To him.
Yeah.
Yes. And, but they develop a really great relationship, especially Indio and Apollo. I love it so freaking much. She is wary of him, like, oh, this large hulking man, I don't want my son around him. But Apollo proves himself time and time again that he is just the most gentle giant around.
The gentle giant.
And I love gentle giants. I love men too. Who look intimidating but are big fucking teddy bears. Yes. And that's what Apollo is. Yes. And so I loved him so much. And I can't wait to talk about this book, guys. So if you've not read Darling Beast, you need to go read it and come back and chat with us. So the whole thing with Heart's Folly, like I said, Apollo had invested his money into this pleasure garden with his friend Asa Makepeace. And Asa Makepeace, you know the Makepeace name if you have read Maiden Lanes. They're a prominent family that feature in this series. But Asa Makepeace is also living under an assumed name called Mr. Heart. He doesn't want anybody to know because his family is pretty religious. They don't want anything to do with the stage. And Apollo literally used all of his money to invest in these pleasure gardens. And since he's a convicted felon, he doesn't have access to any other money. And so he's very invested about getting these gardens up and running again.
I can't start my life until I can at least recoup my investment.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And so he is actually like a landscape artist.
Yes.
And I love that he's so passionate about this. Like, he has so many ideas about how to lay out these gardens to be like the best that they could be. And like, he was very proud of like what it once was, like what it looked like before, but now he has an opportunity to make it even better.
Yes.
And he has so many ideas, and I think that it's so lovely, like later on whenever he brings Lily into his designs.
It was
just beautiful. It's just beautiful. Also, we need to mention that the Duke of Montgomery has come on as an investor to help them. And he's a person that comes into the picture in the previous book, and he says he's going to be their funds to help them restore this thing. But like Val, he like reminds me of, I remember when I first started listening to the Maiden Lane series and Val had shown up at the end of Duke of Midnight, and the voice that the narrator chooses to use for Val, it reminds me of the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yes!
Like, because he's, like, putting on, like, kind of a foppish act.
Show. Yes, exactly.
And, like, that's what he sounds like. Yeah. And you don't know what his game is.
That's how I imagine him when I read him. Like, I have not listened to these books, but I've read him. And that's exactly what I think. It's, like, sort of Scarlet Pimpernel putting on an act so people won't see what's really going on behind the mask, you know?
Exactly. And so he's a compelling character. And it's, like, he knows who Apollo is. He has him turn him in. It's like, what does he truly want? You know what I'm saying?
Nobody knows what his motivations are, and that's
nobody
what makes him
knows
scary.
Exactly what he is doing. And so Indio, Lily's Indio's young
starts,
son.
Yeah, she starts like basically stalking he will call him Caliban, which is from the Tempest Shakespeare's.
I love Indio play. Named him that. Like, I'm gonna call you Caliban. I really love how Indio is not afraid. Like, once he sees Apollo for the first time, he gets over his size, because any dude that is that big is an intimidating sight. But like, Indio instinctively knows that Apollo's not a dangerous person. And like, I really start to love how he wants to kind of copy Apollo. Like that one morning where he snuck out of bed and like he goes see Apollo and he like copies him peeing on a trunk. Like,
yes! Oh my God.
Such a boy thing
it's
to do.
It's so adorable. Like, it took forever to get that knot, you know, like for me to hit that knot before.
They were aiming target practice.
Is that kind of thing cracks me up. Like, it's so adorable. Like, and you can tell Apollo is totally falling in love with Indio, you know, from the beginning, because Indio just basically stalks him, and you can tell he's sort of needing male attention, you know what I mean? Like a father figure. And the funny thing is, let me say, Daffodil is her own character in this
play. The dog.
Play.
She's a little Italian greyhound.
Daffodil is fucking hilarious. Like, I cracked up. I literally laughed out loud at so many moments with Daffodil. So one of the first moments where they finally sort of, I guess, connect, where he's like comes out of hiding, is Daffodil falls in the pond. And so Apollo swoops him out and basically grunts at Indio, because at this point he still can't speak, and tells him to stay away, and then and saves Daffodil. Well, then he's like, well, and he feeds Daffodil like all his food while they're trying to like basically help her recover. And so he's like, well, you have to come home to dinner or whatever. So then they go home to dinner, and he's met Lily, but Lily's very
wary of him.
Very wary. And I remember Maud, the nursemaid, who's also her good friend, basically helped raise her, always says, remember Kitty, remember Kitty. So we have this sort of like ominous background of a friend we know who died from an abusive man. You know?
Yeah. You don't trust men. Story. Yeah. You don't trust men at this point. And so I kind of like it because she's on to Apollo when India really wants him to come to dinner. Mm-hmm. And Lily's like looking at Apollo like, I guess I do have to invite him. He did save Daffodil. Yeah. And like Apollo doesn't want to interact with people. And so he like plays up the, I don't understand. Don't pay attention to me. I'm a Lackwit. You don't want me in your home type of thing. He like scratches his privates.
Scratches his balls in front of her.
And she immediately is like, I'm on to you. Yeah. You didn't behave. I saw intelligence. Yeah. Don't start acting like you're not intelligent. I know that you are. And so she's like, oh, yes, come to dinner.
Yeah, let's not forget we had a Colin Firth moment, but like totally naked, coming out of the lake with his like the water glistening down his fine body.
Look, and I really like because they do mention that Apollo doesn't have an attractive face. Like he has a very like rough hewn face.
He's not like and
I
beautiful.
Like I like whenever authors have their characters to be actually not attractive.
Me too. I thought the same thing.
Another one of my favorite books in the series is Sweetest Scoundrel, which is the next book. The one after. Mm-hmm. There's so many Maiden Lane's books. And the heroine is not a beauty. Like, truly, she's not.
Yeah.
And the hero says it all the time, saying like, she's not attractive.
She's really not that
but
pretty.
I love that whenever it's just, it's not like, oh, she's beautiful, but you know, she doesn't see it.
Right.
It's like, truly, Apollo is not an attractive person.
Yeah.
But the way that Lily gets to know Apollo and the way that he is with India and the way that he is with Lily, it's like, it makes him an attractive person.
Right.
His personality does.
He's not physically handsome, especially not by those standards, which they'd prefer, like, Val, who's this very pretty, foppish boy, you know, man-child, I guess, you know, very handsome and pretty, whereas he's very rugged and not pretty, you know?
Right.
And she even talks about his, like, having craggy lips, so you think of sort of, like, a jagged sort of looking mouth. Like, he's not...
Yes.
He's just not what you would look
at. Handsome.
But every time she sees him, like, remove his shirt, she's just, like, drawn to, like, the masculinity of him. And it's just...
I love those moments.
Beautiful.
It's like attraction despite yourself. Despite yourself being like, I shouldn't be attracted to this person. You still are. And also, another reason why that attraction starts growing is because Lily actually takes the time to talk to Apollo. Because so many times for people like that, especially if they want you to stay away, it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Just stay away. But she's like, what is this notebook that you carry with you? So he starts communicating with Lily that way. And whenever she looks at his drawings for the maze that he's constructing and stuff like that for his plans, he gets so excited that someone's actually paying attention. And even in his point of view, he says, when I'm talking to Asa, even he kind of zones out.
Right. He's not really listening.
He's not really interested in my plans for the garden because this is something that Apollo is passionate about. He's passionate about how to make beauty out of nature. And like, he loves it. And Lily is so interested and he breaks the pencil because he's getting so excited writing and he's like frustrated with himself. And Lily's just kind of like, it is beautiful. And he's just like, wow, this girl's really listening to me. And I love moments when my characters are like, this person's paying attention to me.
Right.
Like nobody else has paid attention to me before. And that's one of the hallmarks of like, yes.
True innate attraction.
Yes.
Like, it's like you're lured in by them. You don't know why, but you want to know more. You need to know more.
It's like, I don't know what it is about this person, but they're fascinating. And anything that they talk about instantly fascinates me as well.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Well, one day we have Apollo is basically found out because Trevelyan, Captain James Trevelyan, who is a former dragoon, he recently had his knee injured, and he's acting as a bodyguard for the Duke of Wakefield's younger sister, Phoebe, and Phoebe is blind, and so he's escorting her to the gardens because she wants to go see what's up, and Trevelyan sees Apollo and recognizes him.
Yes.
And Trevelyan was the one who arrested him originally for the murder, so Apollo was wrongly accused of murder of three friends. They were out drinking one night and he can't remember a thing. He woke up covered in blood.
Horrifying murders. Yes. Like they were gutted. They were, you know, it was just sort of a
bloodbath. And he wasn't even in his right mind. And so Trevilian was going to arrest him.
Yeah.
And they fight right now.
I love it. He comes there. And I love how we go to Trevilian's point of view. He's like, what hubris made me think that I could just like come in here and take him in? Like, you know, this big giant of a man.
Physically, Apollo outmatches Trevilian, especially with Trevilian.
Right. So they start
knee.
Yeah, they start tumbling, and he immediately tells, you know, basically tells her in the way he can is like, go, leave, run. And so she leaves. She leaves, Lily does. And that's actually their first kiss is in that garden, which is really. It's really cute because he had to pick her up because she's
it's
so
like
tiny.
It's like Trevilian ruined a moment.
Ruined
a fucking moment by recognizing him. But I also really love it too because so Trevilian actually shoots and misses, grazes Apollo. And Apollo has a moment where he could physically harm Trevilian, but he chooses to pull back and he just sits down and then
waits for Trevilian sort of to recover.
They're able to chat.
They talk it out.
They're able to chat about what's going on. So he's writing to Trevilian.
I love Trevilian
saying,
says,
like,
you
I
didn't
did not
murder
do
them,
it.
Did you? Like he instinctually knows, like, if he was a mad murderer, like everybody said he was out of his mind mad, and all he wanted to do was murder, he would have killed him just then. And he
one
didn't,
thing that we didn't know? Mention was that the reason why everyone was so quick to believe that Apollo was the murderer is that his father suffered from some mental illness where he was considered mad. So they're like, oh, it runs in the family.
Right.
Oh, of course. The madman's son is also mad. Mm-hmm. And so I really like this demonstration when he pulls back and he decides not to hurt Trevilian. Mm-hmm. Trevilian's like, he totally could have overpowered me, could have killed me.
Yeah.
And instead, he's sitting letting me recover, so I might as well hear him out. And the thing about Trevilian is he's such like a good guy. Like
he's such
a Captain America type of character.
He's like true hero.
He hates to be on the wrong side of justice, and so it tortures him that he could have arrested and ruined the life of a man who was innocent.
And he did arrest him and sent him to Bedlam for 4 years. And we know he suffered in Bedlam. That's where he was beaten.
Yes, and he's like, I can't speak because somebody fucking stomped on my throat.
Bedlam. You know, when he wrote in his notebook, Bedlam. And, like, Trevilian's, like, so – you can tell he feels guilt for that. Like, if you're an innocent man and all what he has suffered, he's like, I have to make this right. I have to – figure out who the real culprit is. So that's when he's like, I'll come back to you, you know, and whatever.
I'm going to investigate these men, see if they had any enemies. And I also love the line where Trevilian's like, did you have any enemies? And Apollo's like, before that night, I would have said no.
Yeah.
But like, I must have some enemies. Like, I don't know who would do this to me. And so he goes back to Lily, and Lily's, you know, horrified that he's bleeding. She tends to his wounds.
Yes.
I love a good, like, I have to nurse you moment.
Let me help you.
Because, look, whenever you're taking care of somebody's wounds, it inevitably means that there's going to be some proximity.
Yes.
And especially in historical romance, like, normally, in a normal situation, it's improper to be so close to somebody.
Right, right.
But, like, she's trying to tend to his head wound. And so, of course, we got to get, like, real close. And I love it. And, like, Maude was warning Lily away, being like, I'm sorry I interrupted this. I'm not really sorry. Stop kissing.
I know. Can y'all stop making out?
And they do kiss while she's tending the wound. And he does open up to Lily about, like, I was beaten, like, I did suffer. You know, this head wound's not the worst that I've ever suffered before, type of thing. And then we get more information when Trevilian comes back to visit, and he was like, so, I kind of suspect your uncle of possibly being the man behind this, because
Uncle Reeves.
He owes money to the earldom that Apollo would inherit one day. And
the grandfather's about to die, by the way.
Yes. And so Apollo is rightfully, he inherits the title of Viscount, but he's not able to claim it because of his, you know, record. But Trevilian's like, I think that your uncle could have done it because he owes so much money to the earldom. He couldn't even possibly hope to pay that back.
Right.
So, and he would be the major suspect if he were to die. So what better way than to throw you away for murder and hope that you would die in prison and die or die in bedlam.
Because he was supposed to be hanged, actually.
And his cousin, one of his cousins, kind of fought to have him put in bedlam instead of hung because he didn't want that kind of on the family record. Yeah, the stigma of, like, we had a murderer in the family who was hung.
Yeah,
and you know, so it's better to just have another madman. Like, we already have one, so put him in bedlam, which saved Apollo's life, to be real. And then Artemis, being the fucking best sister ever.
I love Artemis.
Listen, and I hate Wakefield. I still don't like Wakefield. Wakefield,
Apollo.
Apollo calls him his Grace the Ass, and I'm just like, apt. That's an apt name. Yeah. It's fine. I don't like him.
That's okay.
Fuck Duke of Wakefield.
Artemis is amazing, though.
Artemis is amazing. She's a fucking beast, okay? She fights for Apollo, and I just love the way that she is in her brother's corner and will not waver. And it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Then we also have a moment where we find Lily's situation to be very interesting because she has a half-brother. She is the bastard child, and she has a half-brother who's also a bastard, but his mother was actually a little bit higher up. Mm-hmm. And he actually sells Lily's plays. So not only is Lily an actress, she writes her own plays.
She's a playwright, but of course it's easier for a man to sell their plays. We're talking, you know, this is a long freaking time ago. And we know that for a long time that women would often use male pen names. But Edwin is just basically saying, claiming them as his own, which really breaks my heart. Like, I hate this. I hate this part that
and
his brother.
He has, like, a gambling problem, too. Right. Like, he's not the money person. You should not let him be in charge of money.
Yeah.
And he only gives Lily, and she only negotiated for 20%, but he gave her 25%. So, like, we know he's not terrible, but he's also he's like the type of person that doesn't think that what he says hurts people, but he says it anyway.
Right.
He's not, like, doing it in a sadistic way, but he's also just selfish. He's just selfish.
He's
and
very
he doesn't
selfish.
Think about other people. And I love the moment where he comes and he sees Apollo. And he basically insults Lily.
Yes.
And Apollo
is furious that she's like, you know, it's taking me longer than I thought to write this. Because here's the other thing. The Duke of Montgomery has paid a little visit to Lily and is like, hey, we need a lead actress for a house party coming up. And then lo and behold, Edwin comes up and is like, I need that play to sell it for a house party coming up. And like, oh shit. Like, it's probably the same.
So she has a week to write like half of a play.
Yes. To finish this play, which she already knows she's going to be acting in because she just feels like this is too coincidental. It has to be the same party, the same play. And so, Edwin's furious because she's like, this is taking me longer than I thought. Like, I'm really working as hard as I can.
And he says some disrespectful things to Lily.
Yes.
And Apollo does not like that at all.
I love this scene. He legit picks him up and is like, drops him like by the river. Like, basically, you know, get on your boat and get on out of here.
Yes.
It's like, it's awesome.
Yes.
But the bad thing is the brother's like, you know, I swear you're going to regret this and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So we have this sort of ominous
threat.
Yes.
We did forget, and it's totally my fault because I was just so excited that I skipped over this. There was another moment where Apollo has this big plan to transplant live oak trees.
Oh, yeah.
Fully grown ones.
Yes.
You have to dig a huge
hole. To
go
around the lake. Yeah.
You have to dig a huge hole to be able to fit the roots and stuff like that to be able to plant it. Well, Indio and Daffodil, like, they are playing in the garden. And Indio gets underfoot. Like, he wants to help, whatever. He gets underfoot. There's, like, machines that are holding the oak
tree
upright.
They have, like, harnesses
upright.
And giant, like, machinery. Yeah.
It's a danger to be in this area at the moment, but Indio is there whenever one of the ropes snap.
Mm-hmm.
And Apollo is the one to dive for him and pull him into the huge hole and cover him up to save Indio.
Oh, my God.
And he actually yells Indio's name.
Yes.
So Lily, like, whenever she's like, oh, my God, my son, like, what is going on? Like, and they finally pull Apollo and Indio and Daffodil out and stuff like that. And one of Indio's first things was, like, he spoke.
Yeah, he's like, he called my name.
He said my name, Mom. He said my name.
And it was like, oh, wait, he did. Like, no, she didn't realize that was his voice, like, screaming.
And it's so hoarse from disuse. And so then he tells her, like, I had an injury. And, like, he's talking right now. And he's like, whenever I first tried to speak, I literally could not.
Right.
Like, he was unable to speak. And it hurt so much that he didn't even try again.
Right.
And so it's been about 9 months since he's been rescued from Bedlam.
And since that beating.
Since the beating. And so it's been slowly healing. And it's still difficult because even while he's talking to Lily, he's like, he's forcing himself to continue to talk even if it hurts. And so now he's gaining his voice back again. And it's like husky, and he probably has some permanent damage, but he is able to speak now. Right. So we did forget that. Yes. He's gained the ability back to speak, and it is lovely to hear his scratchy voice.
Oh my God.
So like Juliet said, Edwin threatens, one morning, Apollo wakes up. Something's amiss.
And this is right after, like, the night before, they just had, like, a lovely moment in the garden and were kissing, and he was telling her about, there's so many beautiful moments where it's like, I want this garden to be beautiful. And she asks him some things, and he tells her everything but his name. He does not want her to know who he really is because it could endanger her and Indio. And so, so the next morning, of course, he is not awoken by birdsong, but by soldiers in the garden, like he can hear them. And so he has to flee. And of course, they go to Lily's house and are like, are you hiding the fugitive? We need to search your premises, whatever. She, of course, pretends.
She's such a good actress.
Acting skills. Oh my goodness, major.
A fugitive? What do you mean?
I love it. She's like, I'm so sorry, Major. It's Sergeant. And they're like, oh, she's making them blush because she's so beautiful and just herself.
She's like talking them up, giving them a title that's bigger than what they have and stuff like that, like flattering the shit out of them because she knows how men work.
Yes. But now she learns from the sergeant that he is a Viscount. He is Viscount Lord Kilbourne, and he was accused of fucking murder.
They were saying he is dangerous. He's a killer. And what I love about Lily is like she discovers this, but she's just kind of like,
doesn't believe it.
He's not a murderer.
Yeah, because he's like, he would kill you as much as look at you. And it's like, that
she's
is
like
not the man I know.
Reflecting about how gentle Apollo was with her
Saving her son from being killed himself,
And just like how gentle he was through all of it. And how gently he cups her face when he kisses her. I'm just Lily, I love how she didn't feel betrayed. How she wasn't like, oh no, I've been converted with a murderer.
Exactly.
I love that she was just like, that doesn't sound like the man that I know.
Yeah.
And I love how she gives him the benefit of the doubt. And also, a sad thing was Apollo was forced to leave his notebook behind, which he has a lot of plans to and stuff like that. And so it was like, it was sad. But like, he knocks on Ace and Makepeace's door. And like, Ace is such a slut.
Y'all, I love Ace.
Well, that's the book where the heroine's not pretty. It's
exactly.
Ace's book.
Exactly.
I fucking love it.
Ace's book.
He's such a slut. And he loves beautiful women, and that's why I love his book, because, like, his heroine is not beautiful.
She's plain. She's a plain
She's
Jane.
She's so plain.
But, y'all, this book is so good. I love
his book.
This
book is great. I had a hard time choosing between Darling Beast and Sweetest Scoundrel.
Yeah, really, rereading this, because it comes right before, right?
Right after.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. It comes right after this one. I was like, oh my God, I remember this. Like,
it's Darling Beast, and then there's Phoebe and Trevelyan, and then there's Asa.
Yeah.
So,
So Asa's he's like, oh my God, he gets out his little woman out the door that he's slept with the night before, sends her on her way. Then he comes in. Then I love how Val just like walks in himself. Hey, what are we doing? Like, do you know?
You're everywhere.
Are you going to wait for an invitation? He's like, if I waited for an invitation, it'd be an awful long time before I was ever invited anywhere.
Fucking crazy.
He's so nuts.
He literally has a hand in everything. He knows secrets. Yeah. He literally just has everyone's secrets.
Yeah. And then Trevor shows up too, and they end up, he goes, y'all just sit down and I'll make tea. So the four are having tea.
It's like, morning is ruined.
I know. This picture of these men sitting basically like on his bedding, on his like little bitty chair, like having tea, cracked me the fuck up. It was hilarious. So they come up with a plan though. They're like, okay, we know it has to be the uncle. It has to be who's dead.
So the house party.
The house party is at his house. So of course
we
know.
What a perfect storm of events.
I know. So of course we know Lily's going to be there. So then we had this sort of, but I love how it sort of closes like where Val's like, the first thing we need to do is make you look like an aristocrat. So we know he's going to get all cleaned up and look, all gussied up as pretty as he can look, And
it's then amazing what a good set a of good tails could do for a man. Yes. You know, instant upgrade.
That's right,
instant
baby.
Upgrade. I would still like Apollo in his dirty shirt sleeves.
Are you kidding
it's
me?
It's fine.
100%. He can go naked in the lake. I'm perfectly fine with that.
So Lily was able to write the play. Mm-hmm. She was able to get it done. And they're at the house party and they are rehearsing. And this is whenever she gets her first glimpse of Apollo, the aristocrat.
The aristocrat. Yes.
And it's she so just good. Like, I never really thought about it, but this is his world. Like, this is what he was born to.
Yeah.
He was born to this type of life. And like seeing him, she just like, he's not for me.
Yeah.
Like, I could never be with him.
It's a sad moment. So let's skip to later. So basically what happens is he approaches her and she's like, you need to leave me alone. I am the help. You can't talk to the help. You're an aristocrat. So she like draws that line because it's like so painful for her to think about that she was falling for this man and now he's out of reach. Like, as the gardener, she could have been with him, but not as the aristocrat.
She says that, like, whenever so in sad. Her thoughts, whenever she was just like, you know, it was so much simpler whenever he was just Caliban, the gardener.
Right.
And
he was
now,
mine. Now he's not.
Like, this fantasy is ruined because right. now it's like, I could never be with an aristocrat because of what Kitty went through. Yeah. And then we find out her fucking brother, I swear to God, her brother.
Edwin
is such an asshole.
He's a dick.
And it's just like he shows up there and of course he like takes credit for the play and stuff like that. But also there's this man that shows up. They're literally fucking eating, and I swear to God, Val, the Duke of Montgomery, he's such an asshole.
He is.
And Lord Ross shows up and Montgomery's just like, oh, entertaining. This is
like,
great.
This is wonderful.
This is awesome.
What a wonderful turn of events.
It was so boring before. Because what's so interesting about Indio is that he has two different color of eyes.
Right.
He has heterochromia.
It's a genetic trait.
And Lord Ross also has heterochromia.
Yeah, so we know this is the father of Indio, this man who's here. So, but that night, let's talk about that night. So she goes to her room. She basically
after she does her play.
Oh yeah, she does her play. She's
fucking
looking
kills
gorgeous,
it.
Beautiful.
And I love how Apollo's just like enamored. She has so much power over everybody in this room. She's a powerful person. Like everybody else is so attracted to her.
Yeah.
Like I'm hard, but everybody else must be.
but she's mine. She's mine.
He is very so possessive of her.
Oh my God. It's
but I also
awesome.
Love how he's just like, everyone must be feeling the same feelings I have for her, because how could they not? Like that's
how could they not?
That's how much he thinks of her. He's just like, it's not just me that's this affected.
Right.
Which, of course, everybody finds her attractive, but, like, Apollo's on another level, okay?
So I love how she opens her door, and he's just, like, reclining in her bed. It's just like, who is this aristocrat shithead? Like, he cannot just come saunter into my room. Of course, he's paid off Moll, who was his roommate, the other actress, to go sleep in his own bed.
Like,
and he is
like, you can't be in here. My roommate's going to come. And he's like, it's already taken care of, babe.
She's not coming back.
She is in my rooms and it's an upgrade.
I love that she tries to kick him out. And he's like, no, we're going to talk. We're going to talk about. And she's like, what about us? And she's like, there is no us. You're Lord Kilborn. And I am, you know, Robin
Lily
Goodfellow,
Stump. Yeah.
Lily Stump. And she talks about how she's like, I am the son of a porter, I'm the bastard daughter of a porter, you know, of the stage. Like, not even, like, my parents weren't even married. And so, like, no, this cannot.
Yeah, my mom had a revolving door of men.
Right.
Like that's how I grew up. Like,
yeah, I don't even meet my father. And
let's
you
not pretend,
are an aristocrat.
Yeah,
like,
let's
this
not
is
pretend
never going to happen.
This is something. It's nothing. And
but
he's just like, I don't accept it.
He will not accept it. Y'all, this scene. So he basically breaks. First of all, he pins her down. It's like, now you can't get away. You have to listen to me.
Now that we've gotten that covered.
Yes, and now that you cannot escape me, you're going to listen. And he's like, I am the same man. She keeps refusing. So finally he gets up and starts stripping. He's like, let me show you. I am still the same man. He's like, take me as I am. I am Caliban. I am the gardener. I am all those things. And I am Apollo. He's like, just, I am a man and I'm yours. And like, oh my God. Oh my God.
I fucking love it so much.
So good. It's so good. So, of course, she's like, starts kind of toying with him. He's like, I think we need to get you in the same state I'm in. So he starts stripping
We're
her.
Unequal right now. Yes. We need to even the playing field, which I totally agree, Apollo.
Yeah, so this is their first sex scene, and it is fucking hot. All their sex scenes, by the way,
it's beautiful,
are really hot.
And like, he's such a sweet talker in bed too. Like, he's just like, oh God, the way that he talks to Lily is just absolutely beautiful. I love the way that he talks to Lily. Then they're able to have some pillow talk, and he talks about how, you know, he's looking for evidence against his uncle.
He tells him everything about Bedlam, about the murders, about what happened. So now she's no
everything's
longer
out on the table. Right. Also, my sister's Artemis. Yes, you guessed correctly, because who the fuck names their children Apollo and Artemis?
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah, she's married to the Duke of Wakefield. Because that was another thing that Lily was just like, your brother-in-law's the Duke of Wakefield.
Like, he's
what
a
the
Duke.
Fuck? Like no. I'm not in on this level. I can't compete in this level. And he says, like, you know, he's plans to sneak into his uncle's study so that he can hopefully find some written piece of proof to clear his name. This is all about him trying to clear his name. And so Lily, there's going to be, you know, dinners and parties and all that jazz. And so she has not told Apollo yet about Sir Ross. And Sir Ross actually comes to her dressing room and kind of corners her. And the whole thing is, the reader is not quite aware that Indio is not actually Lily's son.
Right.
And the whole danger about Sir Ross being there is the history of Kitty. And I love whenever Lily opens up to Apollo about the history of Kitty.
Yes.
And, oh my God, it's such a heartbreaking scene, because she's talking about how, like, this is why an aristocratic world is just not for me, because the power that Ross had over Kitty,
it was too much.
And so she tells the tragedy of Kitty, how Sir Ross was taken with her and actually married her. Married Kitty, an actress.
Married outside his class, but then he caged her and beat her. You know, separated
and like
her
Kitty
from her
was
friends.
Hiding it for a while.
Right.
And then he beat her so badly while she was pregnant, to the point where it was such a horrific thing for Lily to recount, because she was telling Apollo, and she's sobbing at this point, how whenever Lily opened the door to see Kitty so badly beaten, like her nose was even smashed in that she couldn't even breathe. Like, it was just
and
horrific.
She died before she gave birth.
Like, she did.
She went into labor.
It was
and
a miracle that Indio survived.
Yeah, because he was a premature birth.
So they knew that they had to get Indio away, so they actually,
and they
like
pretended that the child never lived. That
right.
She died.
That Kitty just died, and they left for the continent so that they could kind of travel, and then whenever Lily came back, it was just like, oh, this is my child, you know?
Right.
Like, I was pregnant while I was on the continent, and
now
this
I'm back.
Is my baby.
Right.
And it helped that Indio was a small baby, too. So, anyway, the problem is, if Sir Ross figures out that Indio is still alive, legally, Indio
is
the heir.
The heir.
And he has remarried since, and he's had two sons. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, Indio stands to inherit all of Sir Ross's things. And so he is definitely a threat. And Lily's like, as long as he doesn't know that Indio's the son, his son. But the problem is, he does.
Yes.
He does find out. And that creates a problem for Lily. And also, Apollo gets some new information while he's sleuthing in his uncle's office.
He sees this guy sort of slinking and lurking about with his uncle.
And he has
got
a birthmark.
Like, he's a giant birthmark on the side of his face. And he's like, wait. And it jars a memory. He's like, I saw that man at the tavern the night those men were killed. Well, come on, you guys.
What are
definitely
the odds?
Definitely not a coincidence.
What are the fucking odds?
And come to find out, he was not even working for his uncle at the time. He was working for the son, George, who bears a big resemblance to Apollo.
Yes. And so, one of the dinners while so nobody knows that Apollo's sitting at the dinner table.
Right.
Everyone thinks that he's somebody else, like under
he's
Mr.
Smith.
Name. Yeah, Mr. Smith, Mr. Sam Smith. And that night, whenever they're all at dinner, George, his cousin, is just like going on and on about like that line should have never inherited the title, because they were all mad.
Right.
They bring shame to the family, stuff like that. Like,
to me, that was when I knew it was George.
You know he's an entitled like, piece of shit, because he covets that title, thinks that Apollo and his father were undeserving, and that they should just be stricken from the fucking family Bible.
Right.
Nobody should remember their names. And come to find out, like Juliet says, the cousin George was the one to hire that man And he also kind of took him on as his valet, but like never really paid him very well. And I love how like when there's like so much stuff, there's so much stuff going
It's a convoluted ending.
When, so first, Sir Ross tries to, corner Lily and has guns pointed, guns pointed at her and stuff like that. So we wrap up that thing where Apollo comes in and saves Lily. Lily, like, almost takes a bullet for him.
Yeah.
There's like so much going on in this moment. And then Montgomery shows up and shoots Ross in the leg.
But I love how Apollo's like, you know, are you, Montgomery, are you ever going to do any, take action and do anything? He's like, fine. He comes out from
getting good.
I'm going to. And then he shoots him.
And then he also says like, oh no, I was aiming for his groin and I hit his leg. Like, darn. And then Trevelyan and Wakefield, they all show up and stuff.
And Trevelyan says that he's like, yes, basically he's saying like a canary, the guy with the birthmark.
Like you should actually pay your people if you want them to keep your secrets, because it didn't even take long for your valet to confess that this was all your idea. You paid him to murder those people and frame Apollo for the murder. Like, and George was just like, basically kind of confesses too.
Yeah. And by now, Duke of Wakefield is there and, you know, so he has two dukes witnessing it, which is like a big deal for the aristocrat society. Yeah. You know, their world. So if two dukes say it's true, then it's true.
Then it's fucking true.
Yeah.
Then it's true. The way the world works.
It's just the way it was back then.
And so I love, so finally they can, you know, rest and relax that Apollo's name is going to be cleared.
Yes.
Apollo will be able to inherit his title, but also now he doesn't have to be in hiding anymore. And now he can be with Lily. The only problem is, like, Lily's just kind of like, oh, it's fine for us to, like, you know, have sex and stuff.
Right. But I'll be your mistress, I guess.
Yeah. I don't expect any more. And he was just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
You're going to be my wife.
Like, and she was like, but, like, your family, won't they care? And they're like, my family consists of Artemis and
His Grace the ass.
Do they seem unwelcoming to you? Like, they love you. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
And I love how he proposes and he's fucking naked. Like, absolutely. She's in her chemise and he's naked and he kneels down. He just like, my light, my love, my darling. And I'm just like, Apollo.
Apollo is like everything,
y'all. He really is truly everything.
Oh, man.
And he was just like, I need you by my side. I need you to be my wife. And Lily's just like, yes, how could I fucking refuse?
How can you not at this point? Are you crazy, Lily? Like, don't deny him.
Exactly. And the epilogue shows that Apollo's waiting for, you know, him to inherit everything.
He's Artemis, back in the garden, like, building again. Yes.
Artemis bought them a townhouse for them to live at for the moment. She's like, I will not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
I will take care of my fucking brother. I love Artemis.
She's one of my favorite heroines in the whole series. I think she's tough as fucking
she
nails.
Is, which is why I don't like Wakefield, because I think that he doesn't deserve her. Yes. But that is my personal opinion.
He may not be man enough for her, and I agree. But, like,
he pulled the whole mistress thing on her, being like, I want you to be my mistress. And I'm just like, squeeze me. She's wifey material, but thanks.
Yeah.
Whatevs.
Wake up, Duke.
And I love the moment where they're in the heart of the maze.
I love this moment.
There is a statue of the Minotaur. And Elizabeth Hoyt, which I will say is not my favorite. I don't like the story before the chapter. Some are more relevant than the others, but it's not my favorite
thing. It can be tedious.
But it was really tied into this story.
Yeah, it was.
It was really tied into this story. Well. And there's a statue of the Minotaur at the heart of the maze. Yeah. And it's
very representative of the beast. You know, the beast in the garden.
Exactly. So. And giving the beast the benefit of the doubt and the chance and stuff like that. And it's just, it's beautiful. And she found his notebook. She found his notebook and gives it to him.
And she also writes in there, I love you. You know, I love Apollo. I love the gardener. I love Caliban.
I love the beast.
I love the Roman. Like, all these nicknames he had over there, like, courtship.
I love you.
It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful. I'm like, damn, Lily. What a great grand gesture scene when after they already had their HEA. I'm like, this is the type of shit that
And I love that the notebook, it had a lot of significance, because in the beginning that was like his lifeline to speak with people, you know, and it also had all of his sketches, his creativity in there. And she kept it like a little treasure. And I just thought that was beautiful. I loved it.
It was fucking beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful.
All right, showdown.
You'd go first.
Oh, I think, okay, so this is really hard, but I think I'm going to go with their first sex scene where he just basically strips down. Is like, I am nothing but this man.
Yeah.
He wants you.
No, that was a great scene.
Like, you know, and it's their first just like, yeah, yeah.
It was a great scene because he was just like, look, let's not backtrack.
Yeah.
Like, I've been all that you've seen of me, and let's not pretend that now I'm suddenly different because I'm wearing a coat.
Just the things he says, like when they're making love, just like, you know, I never thought I could ever have something so beautiful in bedlam. Like, just all the beautiful things he says makes
Elizabeth
me crazy.
White is really magical with her sweet / dirty talk.
Yeah.
She does a really great job of all her sex scenes.
By the way,
intimate and hot.
Lily had some dirty talking scenes, which I was pretty like impressed. Like, our heroine's getting
aggressive. Elizabeth Hoyt is a steamy historical romance writer.
Oh yeah.
She has many, many a scene that I'm just like, is it hot in here? Holy shit.
We have a mounting garden scene, which I really thoroughly enjoyed.
There's a lot to love.
Yeah.
So I think my showdown scene has to be when Apollo first speaks because he's saving Indio because my heart was in my throat. It's like, oh no, beautiful. I don't want Indio to be hurt. And like the fact that Apollo's like throwing himself over Indio. Like, I love whenever there's a connection between
Daffodil's fault again.
Yes,
Daffodil is like a
running around.
Oh my God, that dog.
And I really love when one of the love interests connects with the child of the other love interest.
Yes.
Like, and I think it was done so well in this instance.
It was.
And I really believed that relationship with Apollo and Indio.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it was just kind of like, there's so much happening in that moment because it's like, oh no, I don't want Indio to get hurt. Oh no, Daffodil. Oh no, Apollo, I don't want him to get hurt either. And then he speaks. And then I was like, he can talk now. I was like, oh my God, this is a miracle.
It was just an awesome moment.
I felt like Lily in that moment. Like, there was just so much going on. But then I was like, oh my God, he can speak now. And like, it was especially poignant because if you read Duke of Midnight, you actually get to see the moment where the reason why Apollo got throat stomped is because there was another prisoner that was being tortured.
Oh my God, I forgot about
that. And he calls out to save that person.
It was a woman, and she would sing like a little canary in her cage. And like, he knew the men were going to torture her, probably rape her.
And so he antagonizes the guards from his cell.
He started jeering at them so they would beat him instead.
And so the fact that he gets his voice back, I was like, thank you, because he deserves to speak. Like, it was not.
It was so heartbreaking. Like,
he was a hero in that moment, and he
always
suffered.
A hero.
He was always a fucking hero, okay? That's why I fucking love Apollo, because he deserves the best.
I agree. I love
Apollo. And he
Apollo.
Gets the most beautiful family, and it's just amazing. And I love this fucking
Perfect.
Book, so
yeah.
just one of those.
This book was, if y'all didn't know, we really enjoyed this one.
We really fucking love this book, okay?
This is an awesome series, guys. Highly encourage the series.
Absolutely. It's very bingeable. I ended up by getting all the audio, and it's fantastic. The only thing that I will say, this is a side note, and you didn't listen to the audio, but the side note, a weird choice by the narrator was made for this book and this book alone, that every scene with Phoebe, she gave Phoebe a lisp, and I don't know if it was because she wanted to make Phoebe seem younger, but like, Phoebe has no lisp in any other books, and like, her speech is not described as having a lisp, and so it was just a weird choice in this book. Other than that, the audio is pretty good. All right, guys, well, we hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and we look forward to the next one, where we'll be discussing The Protector by Elin Pierre. Thanks so much for listening.
This goes out to all the fangirls.
Life's better with a little HEA.